You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Difficult people are tedious, but difficult people in positions of power can make our lives miserable. And even in situations where a boss is abusive or his judgments are obviously wrong, it can be risky to force a confrontation. But whether the impossible person in your life is a supervisor, coworker, customer, spouse, or mom, there are ways to manage conflict, create value, and improve the relationship. In Clueless Emperors, How to Overcome Problem People and Not Be One Yourself, human resources executive and consultant Victoria Humphrey lets us in on a few secrets for leveling the playing field, diffusing power differentials, and creating a more productive relationship at home and on the job. It's published by Buzz, which is an imprint of Wyatt McKenzie, and I'm very pleased that it brings Victoria Humphrey to our show today. Hello.
Thank you very much for having me.
Is power an issue in every relationship?
I believe it is. There are very few relationships that I can think of where the power is so even that it would be hard to distinguish one from the other.
Does it always have to do with the relative rank of the people involved?
So rank makes it easy to know when there is a power difference. It's oftentimes the most complex relationships are ones where maybe on the surface it might look like people are equal, but there's usually an edge.
And how common is the abuse of power in our lives?
I believe that human nature is such that when we are getting our way, we tend to like that feeling and we move in that direction. And so I think it's actually quite common, maybe short-lived, but quite common.
Well, you quote Lord Acton, who made that famous remark about power. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. But you emphasize a later, less well-known part of that quote.
Yes. What was said in the second sentence of that, or following that famous quotation, is that something along the lines of, and I'll paraphrase here, great men are almost always bad. And what he meant by that at the time was great people are almost always bad, with an implication that the greatness, i.e. the power, translates into, I can't help myself, I'm going to be bad. So his advice, I think, was right on target in terms of understanding human nature.
And he must have known a few of my bosses over the years. In some instances, is the power situational rather than a fundamental part of someone's personality or position? Like the chairman of the board is powerful in his corporation, but usually not as powerful when he's pulled over for a speeding ticket unless he is the son of the mayor.
That's such a wonderful example. I have seen many screaming executives at airport counters waiting for an upgrade and pretty upset that they can't demand their way because they're in a situation where the gate agent just simply in that particular circumstance has more power.
And I've heard people say, do you know who I am?
I always,
which is a power statement, but it doesn't mean anything in some situations.
When that happens, I always want to shout out, does anybody here know who this person is? He doesn't seem to know.
So what's the difference between power that arises from a situation and power that comes from someone's position?
Yeah, situational power issues are generally more short-lived. Mm-hmm. When a person has a rank, that rank stays with them until, for whatever reason, that rank is gone. So the situational issues can actually be trickier, more difficult to diagnose, and harder to get through.
Because we don't always understand what the power dynamic is in
exactly.
that given moment?
Exactly. If I'm used to having power and I'm in a particular circumstance where I really have less than the person I'm trying to deal with, and customer service comes to mind here, where it's a huge issue in so many businesses. And I ran call centers at one point in my career. And the people that seem to think that yelling and screaming at a call center person is going to help them get their way, and it just doesn't. Sometimes we have to be smarter.
It has the opposite effect, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly can.
I often say, I realize that you are not responsible for this policy, but this is really frustrating me. What can you do to help me?
Yeah, that's actually a very good example of understanding the circumstance and using a tactic or strategy to help you get what you need.
But why isn't the answer then just be nice to everyone?
I actually use that line in my book. And
I think I got it from you.
Okay. And even though it's a wonderful sentiment, it doesn't always work. And that's just the simple truth of it.
Because sometimes people have to be aware of the fact that you are the one who has more power in this situation.
And that you're going to misuse it, and that I need to be prepared for dealing with it.
You've called your book Clueless Emperors. What is a clueless emperor?
Well, an emperor denotes someone with power or leverage, and clueless denotes somebody who just doesn't understand how to use that power.
Well, I'm thinking that the source of that was Hans Christian Andersen's The Emperor's New Clothes.
Absolutely.
The population reinforces the emperor's delusion. Is that the way it usually works in business and in personal relationships?
I certainly think it can. I think that people somehow deep down inside believe that they can't get through the problem, and so they collude. And in my estimation, colluding is you're so close to committing the crime, so to speak. This book is actually designed to help people stop colluding and start stepping up.
Well, on the other side, the clueless emperor could be someone like some of the governors who've been getting into trouble recently.
Certainly, politicians are well-known examples.
Do people tend to reinforce the delusions of people in charge because it creates advantage for them or because they're afraid of repercussions?
I think both can be true.
In the case of Governor Christie, I don't want to pick on him, it was only after Bridgegate that other potentially more serious accusations surfaced. Don't most people in a situation where they have power tend to become more and more clueless?
Lord Acton thought so. I think that it is very common
because for
people to turn into bullies, actually.
Well, as you accrue more and more power, fewer and fewer people are willing to risk telling you the truth.
Oh, absolutely.
And the few people who are willing to confront you, the surer you become of your own judgment and your own position.
Right.
So is it fair to say that most people who are the victims of power players at work tend to keep quiet because confrontation involves the risk of retaliation?
I believe that is the primary reason.
So how do you do it? How do you confront somebody when you're in a really bad situation? Do you have to enlist others to join you? Is that the only way? Form a union unless you live in the South?
Well, certainly the more complex the situation is, the better it is to have help. There are certain let's just take political upheaval. No single person is going to deal with a problem like that alone. But taking it back to the workplace, if I'm having difficulties at work, what I need to do is understand that the form that I use, it's the form versus content argument that's gone on for years and years and years. If I have great ideas and if I have wonderful logic, but I don't know how to formulate those ideas in ways that are, and I'm going to use the word attractive or palatable, I'm going to lose. So what this book is about is what are the physical skills that I need? What do I do with my eyeballs? What do I do with my voice? What do I do with my body? How much airtime should I take? Those kinds of things. Lots of books have been written about the strategic element of conflict, but not the physical way that I handle myself.
When you say your eyeballs, you mean don't roll your eyes or look directly at the other person?
I have been in many a meeting, and I bet some listeners out there have too, when people think they're oh so subtly rolling their eyes. And they're not. Do my eyes dart around? Can I look at people when I talk to them?
I suspect that this conversation is already inspiring some people to think about situations they've been in. And we invite our listeners to give us a call at 212-433-9692 if you've had a problem with a difficult person at work or elsewhere. Or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org, or you can also write to us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. The book under discussion is Clueless Emperors, How to Overcome Problem People and Not Be One Yourself. My guest is Victoria Humphrey. Why do you say that clueless emperors and their victims have cluelessness in common?
If I am the victim of a clueless emperor, that means that I have not figured out a way to overcome the problem. And because there are ways to overcome the problem, that means I'm clueless too, but I happen not to have power.
So if we continue to acquiesce to our unreasonable boss or mother-in-law, isn't it predictable that the situation will get worse?
Certainly it's not going to get any better.
On the other hand, I once had a boss who I realized later just didn't want to do anything. So no matter what was suggested to him, which would have actually have helped my career, he wasn't going to do it. And there was nothing I could do to get him to do it.
There may have been, and you just didn't know it at the time.
Perhaps a gun. Do you think that in the workplace confrontation, women have more difficulty than men?
I believe they do. I will acknowledge a slight bias being a woman myself, and certainly not having had the experience that a man would have, but I do think that women have more difficulty.
Sometimes bad outcomes at work or home happen when there isn't a clueless emperor in sight. How can you tell if you're a victim of someone in power rather than just the circumstances or your own bad judgment?
Interesting question. When the facts at hand are available, people can solve problems. You know that you're in a situation where there's a clueless emperor because facts don't come out. We don't have all the data that we need to solve the problem.
I'm going to take a call from Jennifer from Manhattan. Hi, Jennifer.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm curious. I mean, on the basis that we know that certain personality types, particularly those defined as acutely narcissistic or psychopathic, often seek powerful positions and then unduly abuse their power once in those positions, what, if anything, can be done? Because essentially these are not people you really can work with.
Jennifer, I think that how do I want to say this? Because it is complicated. I'm going to try to simplify as much as possible. First of all, this book is not meant to address clinical problems. And we do have run-of-the-mill narcissism where people who would not be diagnosed as clinical certainly abuse power. So let's assume the type of person you're talking about is a non-clinical problem. If you could see a videotape of either yourself or anyone else dealing with that person, I would be able to sit with you and show you the physical things that are getting in the way of the person who wants to solve the problem and can't. Just a quick example. I have seen people ramble on and on when they're trying to make a point, and their very rambling is what's getting them in trouble and not being able to solve the problem. That's why awareness is such a beautiful thing. You must be able to diagnose the physical reasons, the form reasons, why you're not able to get through to that clueless emperor.
But in some cases, can't the other person have some hot button issues? And that, it could be abortion, it could be veganism, it could be attitudes about homosexuals or the place of women in the world. And there's really nothing you can do to get past that.
I really believe there are ways to get past it. First of all, having a hot button is not a particularly healthy way to live one's life ever. Whenever I have had any little miniature explosions of my own, I recognize after the fact that it's not appropriate and I try to adjust my behavior. That being said, when someone has lost his or her cool, there are ways to get through.
Well, thinking about what Jennifer has said, Can you do the adjustments by yourself, or do you need a friend to give you some feedback about your behavior?
Oh, I think feedback is absolutely critical. We wouldn't do the silly things we do if we knew better. And so we have to find out what it is we're doing that's getting in our way.
Jennifer, do you have a friend who can help?
Well, it's not that. I think I'm raising a broader issue, and that is that I think it's critically important that psychological testing be incorporated into the evaluation and hiring process, because the reality is, even if your book, and I fully respect that your book is not a clinical manual per se, but we know that certain personality types are very power-oriented, and once they do attain these powerful positions, they can make lives, you know, the lives of others a living hell in the workplace and otherwise. So I understand the limitations in terms of what, you know, you can recommend or not, but I do think that this is a critically important issue, and that psychological profiling has got to be addressed.
I'm not sure that you can do psychological profiling of every policeman, but we have had detectives who have recently whose behavior has been questioned. People have gone to jail because they just abuse their power. That is a problem, but we are not going to address it right now because we're going to take a little break.
Okay.
And we will come back with Victoria Humphrey. Her book, Clueless Emperors, How to Overcome Problem People and Not Be One Yourself. It's from Buzz. Stay with us for more. And we are back with Victoria Humphrey. Her book, Clueless Emperors, How to Overcome Problem People and Not Be One Yourself. It is published by Buzz, which is an imprint of Wyatt McKenzie. And we invited listeners to participate. So I am going to go to a couple of their questions before I return to the things that I have thought of to ask you. Amanda from Brooklyn has written to us on our show page. She says, I'm curious as to what Victoria has to say about the power dynamic at play between servers in restaurants and their problem customers, the more common than you'd think kind, who make unreasonable demands. I guess this person has worked as a waiter. Berate the server, withhold payment. A restaurant customer has a uniquely direct power over the server's wages.
I certainly see both sides of that power issue. I think sometimes customers in that situation see that they feel powerless, and the reverse can be true. In those circumstances, it is people's actual behavior, and that is what my book emphasizes. It's our behavior that's going to make the difference as to whether we have a successful outcome in those kinds of conflicts. Over-talking, raising your voice, rolling your eyes, none of those things work. They never have and they never will.
Can you say to somebody, please lower your voice? That's really not the best way to deal with this problem.
Well, that sounds perhaps a little like scolding, so you have to be careful how you say it. But I would just, I might say something like, I'm noticing that you're raising your voice, and maybe it would help if you could lower your voice.
Mm-hmm. Or what do we say to kids inside?
Right. You do have to be careful with your word choices, and that is actually one of the whole big chapters in my book.
Ashley from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I work for a government agency in New Jersey, like a local government agency, and I've just seen so much of the power dynamics of a recent transition in like political regimes right now, and it's kind of amazing to see people just get corrupt with power, and you know, just we don't even know really how to handle it right now. Of people,
can you give us an example? What you're talking about?
I guess one example would be is just like right now we have no technical boss or in our agency because they were put away, or you know, we have large projects and
put away, you mean in prison?
No. Just like put, resigned.
Okay. I was thinking this is New Jersey we're talking about.
Yeah. So it just makes it difficult because you don't have any direction, and we've been waiting for so long for direction for different things, and then projects wind up getting frustrated. Grant money doesn't get used, and these decisions happen regarding just political choices, appointments, that you're just kind of like flabbergasted about people that have like criminal records get appointed, or people that have money donated. And I know I'm from New Jersey politics. I should be used to this, but I think that has made me more used to, made me more liable of dealing with businesses, because at least you kind of know their incentive is to make money. But someone with political ambitions, like, you don't know what they'll do.
Yes.
To get higher.
Ashley, should Ashley think about leaking some information to newspapers? Is that the way she deals with this whistleblower?
The kinds of situations that you're describing, Ashley, really even exist in businesses that are trying to make money. It is human nature for us to, I think, first of all, flounder a bit when we don't have direction. I think there can sometimes be animosities that build up when someone tries to take an informal lead. I acknowledge that you are in a difficult circumstance, and I hope you get a leader soon.
Another listener, Leila, asks on our show page, what about micromanagers? You can't really collude or rebel. It just makes the problem worse.
With a micromanager, I think the key in terms of dealing with situations like that is when you point out what is happening in a factual way, as in, I noticed that you, I have to make something up here, I noticed that you gave me 3 pages of information and I only asked for a half a page, so now we've got facts, right? We're counting the pages, and I'm wondering what that's about. Mm-hmm. It's micromanaging is definitely a judgment. It is not a fact. And I think one of the ways we get into trouble with each other is we throw our judgments around, state them as facts, and then, of course, if you you have instant rapport with people who like your judgments, so stick with the behavior, stick with the facts, and you'll get a lot farther.
Michael from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. Go ahead.
So my question is, I've heard that the best way to handle a bully is to bully a bully. And my experience has been in a few situations where that actually works. Not myself acting that bullysome, but rather answering back in a sort of authoritative or strong way, rather than enabling the person to continue bullying. And I was wondering what you think of that approach.
Well, I'm going to say that I don't like either of those approaches. I certainly don't think bullying back is helpful or useful, and I also would never say that we should acquiesce to a bully. I think that when someone is bullying and when there's danger involved, then there's a certain path that you have to take. But let's just assume a garden variety of bullying. I think that using good physical skills yourself, using a tone of voice that's appropriate, sticking with facts, don't throw your judgments around, don't show any defensiveness, and lead the person toward the facts, and don't show your emotional reaction, is the best strategy.
You're saying avoid what often happens in marital spouts, the neurotic thing where you go from you didn't wash the dishes to your mother was a real nuisance when she visited last month.
Absolutely.
Stick to the topic at hand. And if you do it in a nice, even-toned way,
exactly.
With a sense of respect, the other person would find it very hard to keep on do the bullying thing.
Right. In fact, going back to the eye-rolling example we were using before, since that can be such a good one, someone rolls their eyes at you, the emotional reaction is to get defensive. But what instead if we just said, I noticed you rolled your eyes. That's the fact. And I'm wondering why. That gets the conversation on a better track.
Not always. I had a guest who once asked me a question, and I didn't even realize that I'd rolled my eyes. And he said, you just rolled your eyes. On the air, he said that.
Really?
Yeah. That was bullying on his part, as far as I was concerned.
Well, I suppose tone of voice matters. If you say, I noticed you rolled your eyes, and I'm wondering what that was about, is perhaps
no,
a gentler way.
No, he didn't do
way.
That. He was being confrontational.
Oh, okay. All right.
No names mentioned. Dorian from Harlem. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I work for a nonprofit in mental health in Manhattan, and I'm having a problem with my supervisor. I don't find that she is supportive, and I've tried to talk to her about it, and she kind of turns it around on me and makes it seem like there's something wrong with me. I've taken it to HR, and I seem to be getting nowhere. And I'm not really sure about how to resolve it.
Don't roll your eyes, whatever you do.
I can't know without having the specific facts at hand what might be causing the problem. What I would suggest, because it could be so many different things, I would suggest that perhaps you are doing some things. If you want to overcome this problem, I'm not saying you are the problem per se, but if you want to overcome this problem, you need to get in touch with how you might be interacting with her that is causing some of this. Do you have someone that is around during your interactions who could give you really good quality feedback?
Well, the HR manager, when I spoke with her, she did give me the feedback that I was rolling my eyes.
Oh, really? What a coincidence.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of laughing before.
Eye rolling is the behavior of the day, it appears.
It seems like it. I'm just so frustrated with it. But I have accepted that, and I even said in one of our many mediation meetings, I was like, I take ownership of that.
Good for you.
And I want to have closure on this, but she literally would not verbalize that she acknowledged that I owned that, or that she wants to find some closure. It just seems like she wants to keep dragging this out.
Well, she may be afraid of you. Have you ever thought of that?
Afraid?
Afraid in terms of if you're really competent. Some bosses really get very afraid of competent people who
report
to them.
They think you're out for their job.
Exactly. What I would suggest, Damien, and I mean this in the very best sense, get my book. Read all of there are two huge chapters in the book. One is about what you do with your voice and what you do with your body, and see if you can get some clues about what it is you might be doing. I'll give another quick example of things that people do that get them in trouble. They overtalk. Airtime matters. And what I say in the book is, if you don't understand what your fair share of airtime is, count the number of people in the room and take that number and divide it into 100, and that's your fair share. If you're doing more than half the talking when the two of you are together, that might be a problem.
Thank you, Dorian. And good luck. And Steve, I think Steve has a problem that a number of people have in marriages. Steve is from Morristown. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. Fascinating conversation. And I was 20 years in a large corporation. This is so relevant. But I was calling about marriage, where I've been married over 30 years and just got into marriage counseling in the last couple, and discovered that everything I seem to, the way I have my conversation and arguments with my wife, is all about I'm trying to dominate her in a power struggle. When I grew up in a family where you got to argue, and argument was sort of a form of getting along.
Very interesting. It is so true that we develop habits, and they become unconscious and second nature, and we don't even understand how they are getting in our way.
But this could be a problem on both sides.
Sure.
He may very well be doing something totally innocently, but because she was cowed in her family situation.
Sure.
She feels that he's beating up on her all the time when he thinks he's just engaging in lively
right.
conversation.
Absolutely.
So how do you get past that other than divorce?
Well, here's the really good news. You know the little phrase, it takes two to tango? I don't agree with that. I think that if there is one skilled person in a conflict, you'll get through it. You don't need for the other person, so to speak, to be skilled. So you may be doing some things, and I'm very proud of you for going to get some help and doing some self-discovery. I hope your wife is doing the same. Then once you can get the diagnosis done about what you're each doing to contribute, you'll be able to get through it.
Isn't it human nature to spend more time thinking about what we're going to say rather than about how we're going to say it?
Boy, isn't that the truth? And it's the exact wrong thing to do. We should be thinking more about the how.
So what we're doing is we're coming up with our argument.
Right.
And then the other person doesn't always play along with the argument.
Right, exactly.
And then there you are. You're stuck because you've worked it all out so logically when the better thing is to think about the human interaction that's involved.
Yeah, you're actually making me think about how we think of the word listening. You cannot tell whether someone is listening. They may be looking at you, and they may be being silent, and so you think they're listening. But listening is a cognitive issue. I only know that you are being quiet and looking at me. That's why I chuckle whenever I hear someone say, you're not listening, because frankly, you don't know whether someone's listening or not.
Well, you said you can look at the eyes, and you can sometimes see that the eyes have glazed over.
Yes, I suppose that's true. If they're glazing over, then you do know.
Amy from the Jersey Shore, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm intrigued by this conversation because about a week ago, I watched my husband and, of all people, my 13-year-old get into an argument about something. And it was very interesting because my husband was a prosecutor in the city for 13 years. He is the kind of person who, when you discuss things with him, he really gets down to the facts. And she used every single argument you could think of, every single tactic to get away from the subject. She went on other topics. She went on personal issues. And he kept going back to the center. And I thought, she is so, I don't know, outclassed, because no matter what she said, he would continually say, but that's not what we're talking about right now. And it was really, really interesting to watch. It was like a case study in how to conduct a conversation on both sides.
I bet.
The facts and her to try to get on to other subjects.
Was he using a tone of voice that wasn't overly domineering but rather gentle, I hope?
Oh, he was very matter of fact. He was like, but that's not what we're discussing right now.
Excellent.
And she would get personal, and he would say, okay, we're not going to get into personal comments. And it was interesting to see her pick that up and say, well, wait a minute, you just said that to me. And he would say, no, I didn't. Let's get back to the subject. It was so interesting to watch because she thought she had him down. And I thought, the man was a prosecutor. He has heard everything.
She is learning a lot.
You're going to come up with something different.
She learned a lot, I'm sure, from him, and continues to learn a lot, will continue to learn a lot.
But people with those skills can also be bullies. And I remember a call I once got from a psychiatrist who told me that he used all of his skills and felt very guilty about it, but used all of his skills as a psychiatrist in his arguments with his wife. So she couldn't say something without him saying, well, I think you're projecting right now, or whatever it was that he could use to say that she was really the one who was screwed up in the situation. It can work both ways.
Yeah, that's why I asked about his tone of voice. My intentions matter, too. And over time, no matter how good my physical skills are, intentions do matter. And
then there are hopeless situations.
And there are some situations that are hopeless, and you have to know when to exit.
You know, you're going to exit now, but there's a lot more to talk about. Unfortunately, we've run out of time.
It was really fun being here.
Victoria Humphrey, who is a human resources executive with over 35 years' experience in public and private companies. And she has written a book called Clueless Emperors, How to Overcome Problem People and Not Be One Yourself. It is published by Buzz, which is an imprint of Wyatt McKenzie. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.